Hello, welcome to LifeWire. On today's show, Alan Jarvie chats to Dennis LeCurie of Dr. Hook. Our sincere thanks goes to 242 Radio.
Dennis, welcome to 242 Radio.
Thanks very much. You don't know this, folks, but we had a bit of a conversation about the pronunciation of my name, and it turns out that I'm not too touchy about it. But he got it perfectly. You did that really. I mean, I would have turned around if you would have shouted that name.
Oh, my heart can slow down now, Dennis.
Okay, good. That was all you were worried about, huh? Okay, just wait.
Well, Dennis, Dr. Hook, the medicine show, started in 1968, if I'm right.
Yeah, probably 68, 69. I wouldn't argue with someone who corrected me on that, but right about in there, yeah.
Uh-huh. How did the group come about?
Well, you know, for me, I can only walk you through it through my eyes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was about 19 years old, and I grew up in a place called Union City, New Jersey. It's right across the river from Manhattan, from New York City. And in this little area in Union City, it's, you know, there's a lot of factories, a lot of bars. So people either worked hard all week and they wanted to party and drink hard on the weekend. And because of that, there were a lot of clubs that had bands. Mm-hmm. And so I used to go when I was a kid. I used to go and sit on the steps of these clubs because I couldn't get in. But when the door opened, I could crane my neck and see the band playing and stuff. And then when I was old enough to grow facial hair and sneak in, I started playing with the bands, you know, sitting in,
right,
playing drums and or whatever, harmonica. And the way, and one night when I went in there, because the bands would change all the time. Mm-hmm. And one night I went into this place called the Bandbox. And there was a guy, a couple of Southerners, you know, from Alabama, Mississippi, that had a band together down south. And now they were up here playing. You know, I wasn't sure why they were in Union City. I always figured, you know, they're probably looking for New York and just stopped when they saw lights. I wasn't, you know, but I sat in with them, mm-hmm, and we got along really well. I mean, they were both older than me Ray Sawyer was one of them, and he's 13 years older than me, and George probably about the same.
Right.
So I was like thinking, wow, who are these guys? And they were probably thinking, hey, who is this kid? But they needed a bass player, and I borrowed a bass and an amplifier, and I started playing with them. And, you know, It was just to play in these bars. I mean, believe me, this never came into my head as, okay, this is the beginning of a career. Because it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't even, you know, it was a hobby, mm-hmm, if nothing else. We just got some lucky breaks, and we were smart enough to ride with them.
Well, that's the best way to be, Dennis, yeah.
It's the only way to be when you're doing that. I mean, you know, we really were playing whatever it took. We were playing six sets a night, 45 minutes on, 15 minutes off. Mm-hmm. And we were playing till 3 a.m. And it barely mattered what you were doing while you were on stage. As long as you were making some kind of noise, they paid you. Mm-hmm. But we used to just play covers, country music, the Beatles, everything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all we did. We tried to be crowd pleasers, because in that particular instance, if the crowd wasn't pleased, they'd kill you. So it was like, you know, if you talk about a selected repertoire, mm-hmm, people would come up and go, hey, you know any country music? And we'd say, yes, I believe we do now, you know. And we just get on with it. And I think that helped us later in life when we became a concert act, mm-hmm, that we already, I won't say we knew how to play for people, because playing in those bars was not like playing big concerts, but people are people pretty, yeah, much, you know. Yeah.
And in 1972, along came the song written by Shel Silverstein that gave you your first worldwide smash, Sylvia's Mother.
Yeah, you know, we had recorded an entire album in New York City at A&R Studios and went out to California to do the CBS record convention and to visit Shell. And while we were out there, he sang us in a car, sitting in a car in the back of a Jeep, sang us Sylvia's Mother. I think it was going across the Golden Gate Bridge or something. We loved the song. And managed to get the head of the label to let us go in and record one more song, please, because the album was done as far as everybody was concerned. And it was great because he, Clive Davis, who, you know, CBS is the guy that signed Janis Joplin and, you know, I won't even begin, Santana, Springsteen, I mean, everybody. He signed us and he loved that song. And so he did a lot of work on that. He had the label really send it to radio and really, really work it. Had us out on the road for months and months working that song. So, yeah, it was an interesting first record because when your first record does so damn well, you think that's good news for a second. And then you realize now we have to do that again.
Well, you did do it again because your second single, the cover of the Rolling Stone, was a hit in America, but failed to chart over here because, as I mentioned previously, it was banned by the BBC and you had to redo it as the cover of the Radio Times.
Yeah, you know something funny? A couple of stations in America banned it, but right, because it said Freaky Old Lady Named Cocaine Katie, and there was another line that said we take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills. And if you listen to the record and you have even a half a brain, you'll realize that we're just taking all of that excess and poking fun at it. We're not saying, yeah, come on, this is a song about taking pills. You know, so when it got banned in the UK, we thought it was going to be because of the same reasons. And it turned out to be that it was banned because it was advertising and Rolling Stone was a trademark. And we couldn't say that over and over again. And pretty much like, if you remember, and of course you do, the Kinks record Lola.
Yes.
When they first released that, Ray Davis said, just like Coca-Cola.
Yep.
And they went, oh, no, you don't. And he actually had to fly back from America, I heard, and re-record the words Cherry Cola so they could play it on the BBC.
Yeah.
And so we kind of fell prey to that. But the cool thing about Rolling Stone was there was a number that you could call at that time to hear the record, which was a pretty clever campaign. It was like, well, the BBC won't play it, but it was, you know, it's like calling a porno line or something to hear Dr. Hook's new single. It worked, though. It was great.
I think a side effect of that situation here in the UK, definitely it had an adverse effect on your chart career because the BBC then stayed away from playing your material, although it was played on local commercial radio stations. They missed out on the likes of The Ballad of Lucy Jordan and version of Only 16, etc. They weren't widely heard and your music didn't start to chart again until 1976 with a little bit more.
You know one of the reasons this would happen to us is because we were an international band now. We had hits in a lot of countries of the world, including in Australia, and we, you know, it wasn't like it is now with social media where you could, you know, you could go 1, 2, 3 and press a button and everybody in the world could hear your single at the same time. You know, if people wanted to see us, we had to be there and you can't be everywhere at once. So we would be in an area and we would play and we'd do TV and we'd do concerts and our records would do great. And then somebody would go, yeah, but you know, over in this other part of the world, they're not even remembering who the hell you are.
Yeah.
And we go, okay. And then we, do our laundry, pack our bags, and we get there. And it wasn't until maybe When You're in Love with a Beautiful Woman, that was a record that was top of the charts everywhere at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it kind of focused everybody on us. Because yeah. before that, we'd have, you know, we'd be going to Scandinavia and it'd mm-hmm. be like, okay, well, these are the hits you had there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. you know? Uh-huh. And we really would follow that, like following a wave, you know? But a little bit more, I think you're right about that. But, you know, once that happened, compilations came out, greatest hits mm-hmm. albums came out. And that had only 16 on it mm-hmm. and things that they missed. Yeah. I used to always laugh and say, you know, none of these songs were hits until the greatest hits album came out. Because in some places that was the case. The greatest hits album was where everybody caught up.
Well, we've mentioned a track each. Why don't we take a break and play them both? From 1976, a track that reached number two here in the UK for 5 weeks and was kept off number one by the biggest selling international single that year, Elton John and Kiki Dee's Don't Go Breaking My Heart, and follow up with a single that reached number one, thankfully, here in the UK, When You're In Love With a Beautiful Woman.
I'm gonna love you a little bit more. Come on over here and lay by my side. I've got to be touching you. Let me rub your tired shoulders the way I used to do. Look into my give me that smile, the one that always turns me on. And let me take your hair down, 'cause we're staying up to greet the sun.
Everybody wants her.
answer the call. When you're in love with a beautiful woman, you go it alone. Maybe it's just an ego problem. Problem is I've been fooled before. Just convinces me more. When you're in love with a beautiful woman, you watch her eyes. When you're in love with a beautiful woman, you look for life. Everybody tempts her, everybody tells her.
That's two tracks in a row from Dr. Hook. First of all from 1976, a little bit more, and then from 1980, When You're in Love with a Beautiful Woman. And I'm delighted to say my guest, Dennis LeCurie, is still with us. Hi, Dennis.
Oh, you know, when you said no, yes, I haven't passed away during those two records. You know what I mean? You know what? It was like, yes, my doctor said to me, you have about 7 minutes and 40 seconds left. What would you like to do? And I said, well, I would like to just chat with Alan off microphone while they play 7 minutes and 41 seconds of Dr. Hook. And then Alan could come back and just casually announce my demise. And I think we pulled it off, other than the fact is that I'm not really dead. But trust me, I won't be able to be quiet for that long.
I hope it's many years, decades before I'm announcing that, Dennis.
Yeah, honestly. Me too.
Coming up to date, as it were, these tracks are from the new 3D set, Dr. Hook Gold, which was recently released. What input did you have in the selection of the tracks?
Well, you know, the label called me and said they wanted to do this compilation, and they showed me what tracks they had in mind. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about this particular compilation, because I'll be honest, there's been no shortage of Dr. Hook compilations. Mm-hmm. For a little while in the 80s, it looked like every time they found a new photo, they put out another compilation, you know. But this album, because like what I said to you earlier, it goes from the very early days, mm-hmm. and it's actually sequenced in chronological order. I like that because Dr. Hook was a very confusing band to people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we had our first hit was Sylvia's Mother. Our second big single was Cover Rolling Stone. Yeah. That doesn't even sound like the same band, you know? And we never really worried about, well, we need to do something that sounds like the last song. We never really worried about that too much. Once we got into radio, we needed to find out, you know, when we started having hits, we went bankrupt in 1976. Yes. Or something like that.
Yeah.
While we were on the road. That was, and then Only 16 pulled us in a lot of places of the world, especially in America, pulled us out of bankruptcy and got us like everybody's going, oh, mm-hmm. Dr. Hook again, you know.
You mentioned the album Bankrupt, which...
Yeah.
If memory serves right, had an ironic track title of The Millionaire included in
yes.
it.
Yeah, we thought that was funny. We see, we already knew that we were doing an album, mm-hmm. Because we had gone out as a support act for a lot of major groups, and we couldn't sustain that, man. Mm-hmm. We couldn't sustain staying on the road like that. You know, when you're a support act, you're not doing it for the money. You're doing it for the exposure. And you're following these big acts around that have private planes and staying in the best hotels, and we're all piled in a station wagon, you know, trying to get 500 miles down the road overnight. And so we just had to throw our hands up and file for congressional relief, which is bankruptcy. And they pretty much, the courts in America, pretty much let us keep our guitars and said, good luck to you. And I guess at that point, we could have broken up. We could have just said, well, you know, we've had a couple of hits. We didn't even expect this much. So, you know, good luck to you. But we borrowed some money and we pulled it. We were recording an album, which turned out to be bankrupt. And we were playing at the Troubadour in L.A., I think it was. And somebody gave us a cassette. And I believe it was the writer of the song, The Millionaire, who actually handed us the cassette. His name was Dennis Tracy. And we just kind of threw that, you know, because people will give you songs and say, listen to this. And you just kind of throw it in your shoulder bag or, you know, throw it on the bus. And we eventually listened to that. And we thought, what a cool song to be on an album called Bankrupt, because we had already decided we were going to call the album Bankrupt. And we thought, well, who else would, you know, who else first single from Bankrupt would be The Millionaire? You know,
that was a great track.
Yeah, it's a good song, man. You know, again, you look for songs that say something different.
Well, Dennis, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you both on and off air after been a fan for many years. But just before we play the final track, just like to mention to listeners that Dr. Hook will be touring the UK in 2021.
Yes, and it'll probably go into 2022. You know, we had a couple of false starts at this. In 2019, we were starting what we thought was going to be a two-year tour around the world, and it was Dr. Hook's 50th anniversary tour. And we got four shows into that first tour in 2019 in January, and I wasn't feeling right. I thought I had the flu, but I wasn't feeling right. And I had a blood test, and my doctor said, look, you need to rest. You need some work here. But you're not going, you know, and any other time, Alan, you know, you get sick on the road, you go, okay, next couple of shows are not going to be that much fun, but you work your way through them. But this was like doctor said to me, you know, you're not going out. You're not starting a two-year world tour like this. You're going to have to. So we had to cancel a bunch of stuff. Fortunately, we tried to postpone a lot of stuff, and then we got in back again. I got feeling better, and the band and I got back on the road, and we did about three shows, and then COVID hit, and all bets were off for everybody. So we've had two false starts on this 50th anniversary tour, you know, which we'll probably be doing, you know, in the 60th year by the time we get it together. But I thought, man, you know, I thought it would be a good thing to do because, you know, we go through our lives and we all make mistakes and we chastise ourselves, beat ourselves up, kick our own butts for, oh, I should have done that. I shouldn't have done this. The mistakes we make. And we spend our whole lives doing that. Well, apparently, Dr. Hook is something I did right. So I think at my age, it would be nice to celebrate that. Which is what I'm trying to do. So, you know, the fates allow, we'll be back on the road next year. Everybody's really looking forward to it. I have never been inactive for this long in my life. I should be in a Petri dish. I feel like a science project, you know.
Well, Dennis, I wish you well with Dr. Hook Gold. I highly recommend it to listeners, especially those that may have record tokens left from Christmas. Go out, buy it. It's a fantastic 3D set. Hopefully, all goes well with the tour this time, because personally speaking, after 40-odd years, I really want to see you live in concert.
Yeah, good. Yeah, and you know, and what's the nice thing is, it seems like a lot of people want to come see the band. Yeah. And, you know, I have to attribute that to the audiences, because, you know, people ask you all the time, why do you think your music is still popular? Mm-hmm. And man, it was the people. Mm-hmm. Our original fans liked it enough to pass it on to their kids, mm-hmm. and their kids passed it on to their kids and so on. And now when we play, we have 3 and 4 generations of people out there that, you know, either I haven't seen these guys for 40 years, or I never thought I'd see these guys and hear this, more importantly, hear this music live, you know? And so that's what I'm here to do right now.
Well, not only do I hope to see you in concert, I hope to meet you and say your name correctly, Dennis Le Courrier. Thank you very much. And we'll go out with a track that's on Dr. Hook Gold, originally on your 1979 album, Sometimes You Win, written by Roger Cook, Years From Now.
Thank you, man.
Years from now, and I'll hold you years from now, as I love you tonight. You are my one true friend, always my one true friend, and I love you till I say, as I love you tonight. This world that we live in can be hard now and then, and it will be again. Many times we've been down. Still love has kept us together. The flame never dies. When I look in your eyes, the future I see. Wanting you years from now, and holding you years from now, and loving you years from now, as I love you tonight. I know this world that we live in can be hard now and then, and it will be again. Many times we've been down. Still love has kept us together. The flame never dies. When I look in your eyes, the future I see. Wanting you years from now, and holding you
LiveWire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.